Last night, there was a beautiful documentary on Channel 4 called 100 Vaginas. It was about my guest book. She is the photographer, Laura Dodsworth, and her book is Womanhood, The Bare Reality by Laura Dodsworth. Hi, Laura. Welcome to Radio Gorgeous.
Hi. Thank you very much for having me.
So you're a groundbreaker. You've made a book about breasts and penises and now vulvas. There's so many names of a vulva area. Cunt, vagina, down there, front hole, lady garden, pink cupcake, pussy and fanny. Tell us about your vision for the book and why did you choose the word vulva?
I always try and use the anatomically correct language when I'm referring to the project because, well, the very first question I asked all the women who took part is, what do you call it? And it was fascinating how many euphemisms women reach for or how uncomfortable they are naming it at all. I mean, lots of women said, I try not to call it anything. So that kind of goes to the heart of the project, which is we have this incredible body part. You know, it's a gateway to pleasure. It's how we make babies. And yet we struggle to name it. We don't know what it looks like. It's shrouded in secrecy and mystery. There isn't a body part which is as loved and lusted after, but also hated, feared and controlled. And really what I'm trying to do with this is a radical reclaiming of women's bodies and stories. It's not radical that we've got vaginas and vulvas. We've all got them. All women have got them. But what is radical is women showing the pictures and their stories on their own terms.
Can you tell us about the word vulva and vagina and the difference for people?
Yeah, sure, because there's been this massive Twitter storm about it since the book and the film have come out. Well, the vagina is the muscular tube. It's the birth canal. The vulva is the external genitalia. So the vulva includes the entrance to the vagina, the labia, that's the lips, the clitoris, and the urethra opening. So that's where you wee from. It's the whole, the vulva's the whole kit and caboodle on the outside, and the vagina is just the inside part.
Okay. How did you persuade 100 women to show them between your legs? Between their legs, sorry.
Yeah, I know. Well, I actually thought this would be a lot more of a problem than it turned out to be. I mean, when I pitched this to my publishers, I thought they'd just instantly go for it because, you know, it's my third book. I was feeling quite complacent.
You're on the roll.
Yeah, but no, I had to come in for a proper official meeting to discuss it. And one of their worries was how I'd find enough women. They said, come on, Laura, you're not going to find 100 women. If you do this, you're going to have to make life easy for yourself and look for fewer people. But, well, first of all, if you've started projects with 100, it's a nice round number, you have to keep going. So I'd set the bar at 100. It was actually a lot easier than I thought. Women came forward with quite an appetite for this. I think right now there's a lot going on in culture that makes women want to reclaim their stories. Obviously, taking part in this isn't for everybody, and it's a self-selecting art project. I'm sure a lot more women than not would not want to do this. But I found 100 women really easily.
How did you find them?
I sent emails out to people I know who I thought would ask their friends. I contact groups like cancer support groups. I visited strip clubs in the past. Yeah. I've been known to make friends with people. I start chatting to people on a train just so I can ask them if they'll take part in my project. Honestly, I'm quite shameless how I go about it. I have to ask a lot of questions. But once people have taken part, they're also amazing at then finding the other people. Because, you know, if you'd taken part, I'd be going, do you have any elderly relatives? Have you got a mum or an aunt? You know, if I'm looking for somebody older, or do you have daughters? Have you got any, do you know any young women you could introduce me to? So I was always looking for angles through people who were already in it.
Tell us about the physical taking the photograph of a woman's vulva. How did it happen and how did you make them feel comfortable?
Oh my goodness, I put so much thought into this. I really wanted this to feel, for the women, like they had complete agency over it. And I experimented with so many more setups than I did for my previous projects. And I experiment on me, so I've taken lots of photographs of my vulva. I mean, I even did things like get a birthing stool to see if, you know, if a woman could sit on a birthing stool and hold a shutter release, that's a clicker, to take the picture, which could be positioned underneath her. I found that made the vulva look a bit kind of bulgy. And then I thought, well, actually, if a woman, say, wanted to have children but can't, or if she's had repeated miscarriages, the birthing stool's going to be completely wrong. I went through all these different setups. In the end, I went for this really bog standard setup where a woman would lie down, bring her knees up, let them relax to the sides. And then I'd ask her when she was ready.
They were lying on the cushion, weren't they? I used
a yoga mat. Okay. I had a blanket and a pillow.
Okay.
I've taken the same purple yoga mat, blanket and pillow around the country, taking this photograph. And then I would just kind of come in quite close, take the picture when they're ready. The whole thing takes seconds.
Okay, how about saying, you know, where you get undressed, you know, is it warm enough? You know what I mean? How?
Yeah, always make sure the heating's up, make sure it's warm. Actually, you know what? That was more of an issue with manhood. Quite a lot of men asked me beforehand if the room would be warm because they didn't want to shrink.
Oh, yes, of course, I haven't thought of that.
Yeah, oh, I can tell you something interesting, though. I tell you what, room temperatures does affect how vulvas behave as well.
Wow.
So I've become a bit of a vulva expert without ever meaning
to. Okay, so tell us.
Well, so, well, it's the same kind of tissue as penile tissue. Mm. So vulvas actually move depending on arousal, but also comfort and room temperature. Mm. So I saw lips kind of open and close on their own. I know. Wow.
Like, really like a flower then. We really do look like flowers.
It was really amazing. There was a woman who said, I really want you to be able to see my beautiful vagina clearly. I'm going to part my lips for you. And I didn't ask anyone to do anything. I photographed them as they naturally were. But I went, okay then, if that's what you want to do, that's sure. So she did that. And as I leant down with my camera, her labia closed again right in front of me. And I said, oh, you wanted your labia to be open, parted, but they're closed again. So she opened them again. And then they closed again.
Wow.
And the room was quite chilly. There was an open window and there was a breeze going over us. And I thought, I actually think her vulva's a bit chilly. And it was kind of protecting itself.
That is incredible. So it literally does have a will of its own.
Yes.
So that's just interesting because quite often when you go on holiday, you feel sexier, don't you? I mean, okay, you are wearing a bathing costume and things, but maybe it's the heat, you know. It makes sense, doesn't it?
Completely. Mm. Actually, I find it quite hard to feel sexy if I'm cold, and my feet, if they're cold, you know,
I like my duvet to be kept on.
Unless it's a really balmy day. Like that as well. Yeah. So, that was quite a fascinating learning. But I've told a man that, and he went, well, of course they move, Laura. But if you are a straight woman, you don't see vulvas, you don't know what they look like, you don't know how they behave.
And you're scared of them, and you think... I mean, a lot of people have said I'm interviewing you, and I must say the reaction has been, ugh.
Has it?
Yeah.
That's not very nice. About interviewing me about the project?
No, the project. They're like, why do I want to look? This is even women, you know, why do I want to look at another woman? You know, they can't, I'm being honest.
Yeah.
They can't get their head around wanting to look. That's disgusting, you know, things like that.
I think that we are extremely squeamish about the taboo parts of our bodies. Penises, not so much because they're out there. They're front and centre. If anything, though, they get reduced to kind of base level banter and ridicule.
Yeah, because that's a small one, that's a bent one,
And it's unkind.
And it's always the way you put down a bloke. You say, oh, it's Willie, and you get your little finger up, don't you, and shake it. Yeah.
But that's unkind. But the thing is, there's a whole separate disgust that's reserved for women. And actually, the longer I went on with this project, the more I felt angry about it. Because I think shame holds everybody down, but shame is specifically utilised to hold women down. I interviewed women who'd never looked at themselves, who asked me if they were normal when they looked at the back of my camera. And I interviewed so many women who don't want to have sex with the lights on or have felt like men think they're disgusting if they give them oral sex. I mean, think about how we see that. We see blowjobs all the time in films, don't we? Is this okay that I'm saying
yes,
that? Right.
Absolutely.
We see blowjobs everywhere, but you don't often see women receiving oral sex.
Look at the
size of a feminine hygiene aisle compared to the size of a male hygiene aisle. I mean, we're constantly being told our bodies are disgusting one way or another.
Douching, washing, cleansing,
and
scented panty pads, all that sort of thing.
And that is not good for women. Mm. If you are constantly worried about how you smell or how you look, or if you're too hairy or if you're too leaky, how are you going to really enjoy all the pleasure that body part can give you? So I think there is a disgust factor, there's a squeamish factor. People are like, oh, why would you want to have a look? But there's also a desensitizing thing that happens, and I experienced it myself. I mean, when I first looked at the photograph of my own vulva, I thought, crikey, there's a lot going on there, you know. I was like, wow.
So were you, tell us your emotions when you looked at the picture of yourself.
I had really powerful emotions, and it really illustrated to me how this project would work. It can seem like it's a simple thing, but the thing is, when you confront the physical taboo, it opens up all of the emotional taboos. I looked at it and I felt very, very tender about my experiences as a woman. It fast-forwarded me to some, well, rewound me rather, to some really powerful experiences that weren't actually sexual. Mm. Things came into my mind like miscarriages. I had a really vivid recollection of sitting on the toilet and feeling like my world was falling out of me. I looked at my episiotomy scar and I thought, oh, it is...
What well, I read about that. Yeah. What is that a scar, a tear? Is that a tear?
So I was... I tore for my second baby, but I was cut with my first baby and it was a big episiotomy and it took months to heal.
Why do you think? Do you think you have a smaller channel or your baby was big? What do you think?
It was just a very traumatic birth. He had to be birthed quickly. So they gave me an episiotomy just to facilitate quick birth because of the distress. And I was hemorrhaging.
It was
a bit of an emergency situation. Wow. But because I'd been hemorrhaging, it took a long time to heal. I was probably anemic. And in my mind, and when I've touched myself, the scar is huge. And when I saw it, I thought, oh, gosh, it's so little, but it feels so big. And I realised
how
much... Where
is it? Is it in between bottom of vagina to the anus? Is
they do a kind there? Of a diagonal cut which goes from the vagina so that you don't rip to the anus. That's the point, is to save you ripping hole to hole. It looked small. I thought, gosh, I wouldn't actually know it's there. Nobody would know it's there. No. But I have held on to a big scar because I've been holding on to a memory. Mm. It was so clear to me when I looked at my photograph how much very deep stories and traumatic stories would come up. But by looking at my photograph over and over, not only did I go through these stories and these emotions and become desensitized to the image, I started seeing my vulva as really pretty. I would say I see all vulvas now as really quite pretty. And why the hell not? And it's not like they aren't pretty. Otherwise, there wouldn't be millions of people looking at them in porn
every
day.
That was one of my questions. Did you find beauty there? You know, tell me about... Tell me about relationship between did they become more beautiful or did you, you know what I mean? Tell us about the journey of the pretty beauty.
Well done. You were the first person to ask me this. I think people are pussyfooting around. They're quite cautious about asking me about this. But you know what? You've asked. I shall tell you. First women I photographed, I felt a bit self-conscious, a bit awkward. I was very aware of them feeling shy and awkward. And I had this ludicrous idea that there were normal vulvas like mine and then there were porn vulvas. And the first few women I photographed got rid of that myth straight away. Because
so what
normal
did they look,
is...
Yeah, what's normal?
Just
can you
different.
Tell us?
There is no normal. Everyone looks so different, so different. There is so much variation.
So is it like faces then? We're all completely different down there. I mean, as in our faces are different.
It's that different. Mm. There is so much variety in shape of labia, size of labia, skin tone, colour, size of the clitoris. I mean, some women think, gosh, I really wouldn't know where it is. And some are like, there it is. It's pretty noticeable.
Lucky them.
Distance between the clitoris and the vaginal opening.
And that's about orgasm as well, apparently. If you have quite a big gap, you'll never have vaginal orgasm, which I've never had. So I obviously have a big gap.
I've started having vaginal orgasm since this project. Anyway, first question. So back to
the beauty.
So first of all, my first massive realisation, and it sounds so obvious now, but I realised how different women are. I mean, we're really different.
I had no idea of that either. Seen is like porn ones. So I've seen a sort of very neat one with a track of pubes on it, and that's it. Mm. Yeah.
And then as the project went on, I definitely started to see people in a more tender way. I feel very tender about the women because I feel so tender about their experience. The stories were phenomenal. The access they gave me to their inner world was incredible. It's so moving. And I think when you connect the story with the image, you feel tender about the image. Looking at a vulva isn't like looking at another body part. You know, it's pink, it's moist. It's almost like looking into the guts of somebody. It is like looking straight into them in a way that we don't get when we look at any other body part. And I did start to see them as beautiful.
Wonderful.
I really did.
Did you, I'm interested to know, did you interview them afterwards, after you'd had that intimacy or before?
After, always after. Yeah. With all three of my projects, I take the photograph first, then the interview. And there's a couple of deliberate reasons for that. One, I think if I didn't, the idea of the photograph would be hanging over people's heads. They're not going to relax through an interview if they're worried about their photo. But also, once people have had the photograph taken, it's like, oh, that's easy, because I'm professional, I'm sensitive, it's done quickly. And there's this kind of weight lifted, it feels cathartic, and then they're really ready to talk.
And do you bond really deeply, do you think, after doing this?
I do. Mm. I don't have some kind of ironic, detached journalistic practice. I engage fully. I don't think with this subject matter you can do it successfully any other way. It wouldn't be my way. It's a really warm-hearted, conversation. I'm not asking them a list of questions.
Lovely.
And I do stay in touch with quite a lot of people afterwards. I know that a lot of people are cautious about that. They don't like to stay in touch with their contributors because they want to feel free to go to a line and go over it. Mm. But I don't. I only want to go up to the line with people, and I want to do this with complete respect for them. So there'd be no reason why they can't stay friends with me as well.
That's brilliant. Now, let's talk about the documentary. It was called 100 Vaginas. Was that because the word vulva, people wouldn't know what it was, and vagina might cause more attention, do you think?
Yeah. I mean, I that wouldn't be my choice of title. I think I have to come out and say this because I'm being asked about this all the time. It's Channel 4's decision to call it 100 Vaginas. It's a decision I understand because most people don't really know what a vulva is. I think after all the publicity for the book and the film, a lot more people will know, which is amazing. So in fact, in a way, the title has started this enormous conversation. I think if they'd called it 100 Vulvas, a lot of people wouldn't have known what it's about. And the point is, we need people to watch the film. So to use a word that's in common usage makes sense. And also the other thing is, although I'm not photographing their vagina, women use the term interchangeably. When I'm interviewing women in the film and in the book, they use the word vagina to mean everything. And they're sometimes talking specifically about their vagina and their vulva. So I think we have to give the title a bit of artistic license.
It's fantastic. Gosh, you answered nearly all my questions.
That's because I rabbit
on. It's amazing, amazing.
I do, sorry.
Can you tell us the most moving story that you heard?
I heard lots of moving stories and moving in different ways. The obvious one, but it is incredibly moving, is the woman I've given the last word to in the book, and she's in the film 100 Vaginas. She's an FGM survivor. When I interviewed her, all of the women, all of the crew were crying. FGM, female genital mutilation, is the most brutal violence that's inflicted upon women and their vulvas. I just didn't see how I could do this project without including a woman who'd suffered that. And it was really hard. I spoke to so many FGM campaigners and charities. She's brave to do it. But you know what? This project is all about busting the taboos and lifting the lid on shame. So she's very moving. But I also...
Can you tell us in what... Can you tell us her story?
Yeah. So she had this done when she was a little girl. She didn't know what was going to happen. You know, they don't tell little girls, oh, you're going to have your clitoris cut off and it's going to hurt and ruin your sex life. They treat it like it's a party, like it's Christmas, it's becoming a woman. She was given a watch as a present. For her, every time she looks at a watch, she remembers FGM. Her family were quite well off, so she was given a local anaesthetic, but that would not be typical. But still, she suffered weeks of terrible pain. For her, it created serious problems with menstruation because she was left with a hole the size of a matchstick, one hole to urinate and menstruate through. She was in that hospital for all of her teens.
Sorry.
Well, for sex, this is a man will have to force through. And of course, it will, yes, excruciatingly painful. And then the other thing is that when women give birth, the hospital, the medics will stitch them back up again. So it's an endless cycle of pain. And
it's extraordinary. How did
violence.
This, why is it this just particular place, Somalia? Is it culture or is it religion?
It isn't just Somalia. It happens in other countries. It happens in quite a few countries around the world. And it happens to girls here in the UK. There's just been a court case. Finally, a conviction for someone who has allowed their child
to have
religion?
FGM.
I'm not the best expert to speak about FGM. I think you should do a separate show with an FGM survivor or campaigner. But I understand it's more cultural than religious. There is no religion that demands female genital mutilation. It's cultural. And around the world, there are 200 million girls and women who've had it. So she's a very moving story, but she's not just a victim as well. She is very funny.
Yeah,
she's married, she has an amazing sex life, and she's a sexual health nurse.
Yeah.
So,
she came on and she was really jolly, and I was like, this is a great woman. And then she admits it, and it's like, and you're still this wonderful, positive force.
She's a tour de force. She is phenomenal.
Yeah.
There's a woman in the book who had cervical cancer. And she hadn't gone for her smear test because of body shame. You know, we're at an all-time low for smear tests at the moment. She was one of the women who doesn't want to go because she felt ashamed about her body. She got cervical cancer, which she only found out from heavy bleeding after sex. And in the end, her cancer spread and she has had to have not just her cervix, her uterus, her tubes removed, but also her vagina. She's had a complete vaginectomy.
I've never even heard of a vaginectomy until this moment, by the way. I didn't even know it existed.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was terribly sad. But again, she's a very funny woman. I don't know if anybody had me laughing as much as she did. Her story in the book's just...
So can you still make love, or...?
Well, she wouldn't be able to have penetrative sex. Mm. I mean, an issue for her now is she's single, mm. and she might be ready to be starting to date, but she said, how would she do that? At what point when you're dating do you tell somebody you don't have a vagina? Because, of course, sex does not have to include a vagina. Mm. Let's not forget, as a lot of men get older, they also have problems with erections, and we don't have to have penetrative sex. She still has labia and clitoris that feel good and she could still orgasm. But it's a big thing to tell somebody when you're dating, isn't it? How would you do that? It's huge. There's other kinds of moving stories. Like, there's a woman who described how when she had a natural childbirth she had an orgasm. Mm. And I was just carried away with this delightful story she told me. But for her, she felt some kind of shame about it. She didn't want the people in the room to know, because she thought, well, is that weird that you can have an orgasm when you give birth? And I've read a number of cases of this happening. She hadn't even told her husband. She just kind of, you know, there's a lot of noise going on at the time anyway, so she just sort of masked it. But that was quite moving, that birth can be so wonderful that a woman can orgasm, albeit rare. Mm. But, you know, it's hard to pick out standout stories, because actually everybody was moving. Everybody was funny, moving and juicy, really.
So you dealt with, people talked a lot in the documentary about menstruation, which, I mean, even the image for me was just quite shocking, of a woman taking a Tampax out.
Mm. Full credit to Jenny Ash, the director. Mm. I was so happy to be working with her on this film. I think she's done my project such justice and created something which is visually beautiful and really is as controversial as it should be given this subject. So that was her idea. There were some people said, we don't need to go that far. And I said, yes, I think it's perfect. I think we absolutely do need a woman taking a tampon, because why not? Yeah. Half the world's made up of women, and nearly all of us have periods, and we all do it.
Yes.
This isn't really shocking that women have periods. What's shocking is there's so much shame around it. Mm. Mm. And that footage is done beautifully.
Soft focus,
really pretty. It's beautiful. This is all, it's female gaze, not male gaze. Mm. Jenny Ash, the director, and the director of photography, Anne Evelyn Lawford, brought a very beautiful visual aesthetic to the film. And I just think it's about time that we brought periods and all these other taboo subjects fully out into the open.
No, it's absolutely extraordinary. So people talk about squirting, orgasms, wanking. They talk about, grooming their fannies. Did you see there was a lot of difference between hair, you know, pubes and things?
I think there's a full gamut of styles in the whole project, womanhood. And what was quite reassuring to me was there was a bit more pubic hair than I thought. Yes. I was worried that everybody would not have hair. And that's
back.
and that's fine if that's someone's choice. But I don't like the idea that women feel pressured to do it, because... Mm. And there are young women in womanhood who say that, you know, all young women have to, otherwise boys think they're disgusting. Young men think they're disgusting. And that's sad. But actually, I think women are exercising a lot more choice than I thought they would. I grew a full bush before the projects. I thought, well, somebody's got to have pubic hair. I'm really worried nobody will have pubic hair, so it's going to be me. But yeah, there was
What's your natural choice?
Well, oh my goodness, we're going to very personal territory now. My pubic hair choice.
Yes.
I groom. I don't remove all my hair. I don't like to. I feel weird about it. It's fine if it's other people's choice, but for me it feels infantilizing. I don't want to feel like a little girl. And for a 46-year-old woman, that feels bloody ridiculous, as well as weird, to be honest.
Have you tried it?
I have. Oh, goodness. I've tried quite a lot of things, to be fair, over the years. I have removed all my pubic hair before.
It feels different, doesn't it?
Yeah,
silkier.
I do like to remove some hair underneath, because I think it's nice for sensation. Mm. But that's very much about sensation for me. I wouldn't want to see myself in the mirror and not see pubic hair, because I would feel weird about myself. Mm. It feels a little girly.
Yes.
Which is an uncomfortable feeling for me and not sexy.
Yeah. And you do have children, don't you?
I have children. I have two sons, but it's not even for them. This would have been my preference before children as well. Mm. I don't like not to have any.
And what about gender? Because that's obviously one of the biggest subjects. People didn't say whether they are men or women, or, you know, it's very fluid, isn't it, nowadays?
Well, Well, I think gender's an interesting one. All of my work looks at gender, but what my work really does is look at our sexed experience of the world. Now, I have been asked why I called this book Womanhood, and I find it interesting that I'm asked that because nobody asked me about manhood.
Oh my God, that's so telling again,
isn't it? Just because women's bodies and women's agency are contested, but not men's bodies and agency.
Yeah, because a manhood, you just think of a penis immediately, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah, whereas yeah. I've had a tweet from someone who I think is transgender saying womanhood isn't stored in the vagina. Well, I never said it was, but this is an artistic exploration of what womanhood means to people. I always include people of different genders because I think that contributes to a really interesting conversation about what it means to be a man or a woman. So in womanhood, there's a transsexual woman and two women who define themselves as non-binary. So I think they'd both be happy with me saying they're non-binary women or just non-binary. And so why they feel like that is interesting. That's an interesting part of the conversation. But this is unashamedly putting women at the centre of their own conversation. And when we talk about the vulva and the vagina, it brings up so many uniquely definitive female experiences. So although gender is part of the conversation, my work is about taking a look at how we interact with the world through our bodies. It's using the uniquely male and female body parts to open up the conversation. It's about a sexed experience of the world.
Tell us about the celebratory aspect of the book then.
I think that this is celebratory because it's putting women at the front of their own conversation. It's women sharing photographs on their own terms and sharing their stories on their own terms. That is cause for celebration, to be honest. Women are often reduced to two-dimensional characters, and this is a complete subjectification of women. It's women speaking on their own terms. That's the celebration for me. And I feel very proud of the women who are in it, and it makes me feel proud of women and also proud of myself, because although there's some sad stories and some difficult stories in there, what comes through so strongly is how resilient women are. I think our experience of the world is beautiful, and that should be celebrated.
Thank you so much for coming onto Radio Gorgeous and sharing your inner vulva with us.
Thank you, and thank you so much for asking me about my pubes on the radio. It's amazing. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure. Womanhood, The Bare Reality by Laura Dodsworth is published by Pinter and Martin. And if you want even more extraordinary women, just go to Radio Gorgeous.